This is Bad Cop, No Donut for the week of June 23rd, 2005.
All right, freeze! Police!
Bad Cop.
Donut!
Bad, 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 bad.
Cop, 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 cop.
No, 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 no. Donut, 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 donut.
He's under law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview about a new website designed to take complaints about the Vancouver, British Columbia Police Department. But first, let's have a look at what the police did to us this week. A San Francisco, California police officer who was charged in 2004 with drugging and raping a woman 3 years earlier killed himself this week. The San Francisco Chronicle says that last Thursday, Officer Wilfredo Gonzalez failed to appear in court on his rape charges, and a relative later found him dead in his home, apparently of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Had Gonzalez made it to court that day, he would have been charged in connection with the rape of a second woman under similar circumstances in 2003. In both cases, the officer met the victims on the internet. He had been on unpaid leave since his May 2004 arrest. Two San Francisco police officers were charged last Friday with providing alcohol and fireworks to underage girls. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, officers Arkady Zlobinsky and Michael Turkington were on duty and in uniform during the incidents which occurred last summer. They have been charged with conspiracy and furnishing alcohol to a minor. Both were suspended pending the outcome of the case. Zlobinsky was already facing internal charges for releasing a domestic abuser who should have been arrested last year. He was also suspended for 15 days in 2003 and placed on probation for 2 years after he picked up women from a party and drove them around in his squad car while he was on patrol. The preliminary hearing for a Cathedral City, California police officer accused of asking for sexual favors in exchange for letting women out of tickets was delayed. KESQ reports that the hearing for Officer Larry Lee did not happen as scheduled last week. Lee is accused by one woman of offering to let her out of a ticket if she showed him her breasts last October. The woman refused and left without receiving a citation. A second victim described a similar incident in January of this year, but she allowed the officer to fondle her breast and penetrate her with his fingers. In that case, the woman ended up receiving a citation from the officer. Lee was charged in April with asking or agreeing to receive a bribe as a public official and committing an act of sexual penetration by threat of a public official. Lee is facing 12 years in prison if convicted, and is currently free on a $50,000 bond. Lee has quit his job with the police department. The FBI has launched an investigation into the actions of police in Hermosa Beach, California, who were accused of falsely arresting three citizens last year and then lying in reports and in court in an attempt to cover up their actions. The Los Angeles Times reports that the three were arrested in May 2004 after police say they pounded on the hood of a police car of an officer who had honked his horn at them. All three deny hitting the officer's car, and none of the arrested were convicted of the charges connected with the incident in court. All three claim to have been physically abused by the officers who arrested them. Hermosa Beach police say that they have already cleared their officers, including one named Todd Lewitt, of any wrongdoing in the incident. The FBI say that they have begun a preliminary investigation into allegations of civil rights abuses by the Hermosa Beach police, and two of the three who say they were falsely arrested claim that they have already been interviewed by FBI agents. A police officer in Gold Beach, Oregon, was arrested last Thursday for conducting an inappropriate search of a local woman. The Curry Coastal Pilot says that Officer Wallace Hartman was arrested and charged with first-degree official misconduct. The search, which was conducted at a gas station, was captured on tape by video surveillance equipment. Hartman was released and is suspended without pay pending an internal investigation. A police officer in King City, Oregon, was arraigned Monday on charges that he sexually abused a boy he met on the internet. Brendan Tompkins did not enter a plea to his charges, two counts of second-degree sexual abuse. Tompkins remains free on his own recognizance and has been suspended with pay from his job. He will appear in court for a preliminary hearing on July 22nd. A Kennewick, Washington police officer has been charged in connection with an April road rage incident in which he allegedly pointed his gun at another motorist while he was off duty. The Tri-City Herald reports that Officer Ryan Bonnelly appeared in court on Wednesday on a charge of second-degree assault. The officer was fired from his job in April when the incident was originally reported, and an internal investigation concluded that there was strong evidence Bonnelly had broken state laws. A Sioux Falls, South Dakota police officer was charged early Tuesday morning with impaired driving and leaving the scene of an accident. KELO reports that Officer James Madsen drove through a red light and struck another vehicle before driving away. He was stopped by some of his fellow officers in an obviously drunk state a short distance away. The driver of the other vehicle was not hurt. The chief of police in Sioux Falls is waiting for the results of blood alcohol tests to come back before deciding on disciplinary action. A police officer in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, was sentenced to 3 years of probation on drug charges last Thursday. An Associated Press report says that Officer John Evans had previously pleaded guilty to charges that he stole and smoked crack cocaine that had been seized as evidence. The lawyer for a police officer in Hilltown, Pennsylvania, who was accused of raping a boy hundreds of times over a 6-year period, did not challenge any of the charges at a preliminary hearing last Friday. The Bucks County Courier-Times reports that Officer James Kane will be formally arraigned on July 15th. The alleged rapes began in 1996, when the boy was 11 years old, and continued until 2003. Many of the alleged rapes occurred in the officer's home while he was partially dressed in his uniform. Kane was arrested in April after the boy's mother made a complaint after learning of the abuse. Kane was charged with rape of a child, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, aggravated indecent assault, corruption of a minor, endangering the welfare of a child, and possession of child pornography. He's being held on $1 million bail. A part-time police officer who worked in both Avoca and Duryea, Pennsylvania, has been charged with sexually assaulting two girls. According to the Citizen's Voice, Officer Christopher Collins forced the girls to have sex with him in Scranton, Pennsylvania, in 2001. The girls were 14 and 15 at the time. Collins has been charged with involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, statutory sexual assault, indecent assault, and corruption of minors. One of the victims described being driven home by Collins, who instead drove her to a secluded parking lot where he forced her to have sex with him. She claims that she said no to Collins, but then relented when she became afraid of his gun. The second victim described a similar attack. Collins denied all of the allegations when he was first questioned by investigators. A state trooper in Illinois was suspended this week after he was accused of forcing a couple to strip to their underwear during a traffic stop. An Associated Press report says that Trooper Gary Dozier was charged Friday with 4 felony counts of official misconduct, and he was released after posting $5,000 bail. The incident took place on Friday on Interstate 94 in the northern suburbs of Chicago. After managing to escape the trooper, the couple called for help, but were forced to flee again when the officer sent to investigate turned out to be Dozier himself. The parents of one of the car's occupants contacted authorities later, and an investigation was launched. An investigation of the incident continues. A police officer in Steubenville, Ohio, who was fired after being charged with domestic abuse, is back on the job as of Monday. The Herald Star reports that Officer James Marquis was charged with domestic abuse after a complaint was filed by his wife and stepson last October. At that time, he was placed on paid leave and then fired in February. The prosecutor and judge assigned to the case eventually decided to change the charge to disorderly conduct. Marquis pleaded no contest to that charge and was fined $100, required to pay $54 in court costs, and ordered to seek anger management counseling and not to have any contact with his ex-wife. A conviction on a domestic abuse charge would have meant that Marquis would no longer be able to carry a firearm and therefore could no longer work as a police officer. The reduced charge meant that the decision to terminate the officer went to an arbitrator who decided in favor of Marquis keeping his job. Marquis will also receive all back pay and benefits. Two New York City police officers have been suspended for fighting each other on the job. The New York Post reports that the unnamed officers both worked for the department's mounted unit. Both suspended officers were treated for injuries in a hospital after the fight, which broke out on Saturday at a police stable. Both are facing internal charges of conduct unbecoming an officer. A Russell Springs, Kentucky police officer was arrested last Friday after a drunken auto collision. WBKO reports that Officer Charles Wheeler crashed the car he was driving directly into another one, which contained a 17-year-old driver and two passengers, his mother and sister. All three of the occupants of the other car were taken to hospital, treated, and released. Wheeler was charged with driving under the influence of alcohol and three counts of wanton endangerment. Wheeler, who works as a DARE officer in Adair County, will be arraigned on July 11th. A former Newburyport, Massachusetts police officer who was fired for his uncontrolled violent behavior was charged this week with three counts of sexually abusing a minor. An Associated Press report says that Scott Belanger is accused of molesting a 12-year-old girl over several months last year and then threatening to kill her and her family. Belanger already faced multiple sexual assault charges relating to incidents which occurred in Salisbury, Massachusetts between 1999 and 2004. He's also been charged with sexually assaulting a child in North Andover, Massachusetts in 2003. A former state trooper in Middletown, Connecticut killed his ex-wife and critically wounded her lawyer in a shooting outside of a courthouse where they were scheduled to appear last week. The Hartford Courant reports that the retired trooper, Michael Bocciccio, then turned the gun on himself. He died subsequently in hospital. The couple had been involved in a custody battle over their two children. His ex-wife's lawyer remains in serious but stable condition in hospital. A Springfield, Vermont police officer has been charged with committing fraud in New Hampshire. An Associated Press report says that Officer Robert Lagerstedt used stolen identities and disguises to get a $10,000 loan and open a bank account. One of the stolen identities belonged to a lost driver's license that had been turned into the officer at a police station. Lagerstedt has been charged with mail fraud and identity fraud. He resigned from his job after being suspended earlier this spring. A police officer in Fairmont, North Carolina, was arrested last Thursday after investigators discovered thousands of dollars worth of stolen property inside his home and a stolen car in his backyard. According to a report in the Robesonian, Officer Ronald Williams has been charged with three felony counts of receiving stolen property and felony aiding and abetting. Williams is currently free on a $5,000 bond. State authorities and the FBI are investigating an incident during which a motorist was beaten by two police officers at a traffic stop in Dillon, South Carolina. The Florence Morning News says that officers Donnie Grimsley and Darren Miles were both fired for their actions at the June 5th traffic stop, which was captured on videotape by a camera in one of the officers' cars. The videotape showed Grimsley beating his victim, and he has been charged with assault and battery of a high and aggravated nature and misconduct in office. Last Friday, the FBI confirmed their involvement in an ongoing investigation of the incident. A police officer in Holly Hill, South Carolina, is accused of dropping traffic charges against women in exchange for letting him videotape them stripping. The Associated Press reports that Officer Mark Wright was arrested last Thursday and charged with four counts of misconduct in office. On two occasions in 1999 and 2004, Wright is accused of allowing women who were detained at traffic stops to drive to the police station where he offered to let them go in exchange for videotaping them. In 1998, he is accused of offering to let a woman out of a speeding ticket if she let him photograph her breasts. In 2004, he was conducting a drug search when he came across pictures of a woman in sexually compromising positions and kept them. A Port of Charleston police officer was stripped of her badge and banned from working as a police officer in the state of South Carolina this week. An Associated Press report says that Officer Elizabeth Jordan was fired after a state background check. Allegations of drug use and dishonesty led to Jordan's 2004 dismissal from the North Charleston Police Department. Jordan tested positive for marijuana on a random drug test and then lied to her superiors when confronted with the results. The last of three police officers charged in a Memphis, Tennessee drug, prostitution, murder, and robbery conspiracy has accepted a plea deal this week. WREG reports that Officer David Tate has worked out a deal with the U.S. Attorney's Office and has filed a motion to change his plea. Details of the deal are not yet available. All of his co-accused, two of Tate's fellow police officers and his girlfriend, pleaded guilty to their charges and received light sentences earlier this year in exchange for their testimony against Tate. Tate, the alleged ringleader of the group, was facing charges connected to transporting prostitutes and illegal drugs, accepting bribes, and planning to rob and kill a man. A supervisor in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana Police Department who was curious about why other officers didn't like him has been accused of spying on them with a baby monitor. The Associated Press reports that Officer Lee Shelton was charged last Wednesday with one count of intercepting and disclosing electronic communications, a felony which carries a potential 19-year prison sentence. Another officer found the receiving device in Shelton's desk. He was released on his own recognizance. An RCMP officer in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, remains on duty despite being charged with assault. The CBC reports that Constable Gary Patterson was accused of choking a man in a police holding cell in February. He's scheduled to stand trial in July. The RCMP say they canvassed the community and determined that there was no opposition to Patterson remaining on full active duty. They also pointed out that a conviction on the charge would not necessarily mean that the officer would lose his job. A police officer in Kenora, Ontario, is now facing six misconduct charges over a botched murder investigation. According to the Thunder Bay Chronicle-Journal, Officer Lloyd White will enter a plea to the charges in mid-July. He is charged with three counts of neglecting to perform his duty and three counts of acting in a manner likely to discredit the police force. White is the second officer to be charged in the case. Thomas Favreau is facing 10 misconduct charges, and his case will go to trial in September. Both officers are suspended with pay pending the outcome of their cases.
You're going to shoot me? He's got a gun and he's
going
to shoot me.
Get out of the car now, or I'm going to tase you. Get out of the car now, or I'm going to tase you. I'm going to tell you one more time. I'm going to tell you one more time. Get out of the car. Get out of the car, or I'm going to tase you.
The next street off of Seacrest.
Put your hands behind your back. Do it now. Do it now or you're going to get tased again. Do it now. Do it now. On your back. Put your hands behind your back. Put your hands behind your back.
Police in Payson, Arizona are accused by witnesses of using a taser on a handcuffed man that was not resisting officers. The incident occurred after a chase on Sunday. Police in Palm Bay, Florida have been ordered not to use tasers on people who are extremely thin. Police shot an unarmed 17-year-old boy with a taser in the chest, puncturing his lung earlier this month. Police were called after the boy fought with his father. An emergency room doctor said that it appeared as though one of the taser's darts, which have been described as resembling straightened fish hooks or miniature harpoons, punctured a hole in the boy's lung, forcing it to collapse. The boy was taken to hospital where his lung was reinflated. The Palm Bay police will continue to use their 110 tasers. More than 300 demonstrators turned up outside of the Miami-Dade Government Center last Wednesday to demand that county law enforcement officers stop using tasers until better research into their medical effects can be conducted. The protest was organized by church and civil rights leaders. Last week, a Miami-Dade deputy shocked her partner with a taser accidentally while they were trying to apprehend a suspect who was later shot to death by the deputy. Police in Miami-Dade have used tasers on minors 31 times since 2003. A decision will be made next month on whether or not to ban the use of tasers on children under 12. A similar proposal was rejected by the Cincinnati, Ohio City Council earlier this year. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference is insisting that the Gwinnett County, Georgia District Attorney reopen a probe into the taser-related in-custody death of a man in May 2004. The man, who was shackled, handcuffed, and restrained by a half-dozen sheriff's deputies, was shocked 5 times with a taser as the deputies tried to force the man into a restraint chair. SCLC officials say that if the district attorney refuses to re-examine the case, they will hold nationwide protests in August. On Monday, the district attorney indicated that the case would remain closed. 2 weeks ago, police in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, began using tasers. In that time, they have used the devices 6 times. The city council in Medina, Ohio, has approved the purchase of 12 tasers for its police department. Police in Rochester, New York, are calling their taser pilot project a success. 65 of the devices have been in use there since July 2003, and 24 people have been shocked by them. Only one of those people suffered minor injuries. Meanwhile, a lawsuit was filed by a learning disabled woman in nearby East Rochester this past March, who claims she was repeatedly tasered in the genitals by a police officer. On Tuesday, Taser International announced 4 new sales worth almost $1 million. X26 models have been purchased by police in Calgary, Honolulu, Houston, and one unnamed law enforcement agency. Taser shares are now trading at below $11, down from a $33 high in December, and the company's second quarter earnings are not expected to improve much beyond their dismal sales in the first quarter of this year.
I have a man with a hand grenade and 700 steward in the lobby of the federal courthouse. We do have a SWAT response. The male has been making threats. He is carrying a device that appears to be a hand grenade. We have him at continuous gunpoint, but he's unwilling to surrender the device.
Other than the killings already reported in this week's program, police also killed people this week in Decatur, Texas, Seattle, Washington, Newark, New Jersey, and Crossville, Tennessee. For many people, the process of filing a complaint against the police can be an insurmountably daunting one. Usually, complaints are only received by the same police departments that are being complained about, sometimes only at the precinct or division where the offending officer works. An investigation is often carried out by a coworker of the officer, who often works in the same building or station house as the officer under investigation. Complaints against the police are often not treated as seriously as the people making the complaints would like, even in those cases where a formal complaint is filed at all. Often, witnesses to police misconduct are not permitted to file a complaint. In many jurisdictions in the U.S. and Canada, the only one with the right to complain is the victim of the misconduct. In other words, if you see the cops beating up a person, you cannot complain. Only the person getting beaten up can complain. And how likely is the victimized individual going to be to attend the police station where the cops that beat him up work to file the official complaint form? People of privilege often seek an alternate remedy in the court system. But that only works if you can afford a very good lawyer. In Vancouver, British Columbia, a group of people who have no ties to the police have started a website designed to take public complaints about the Vancouver Police Department. People with internet access can report incidents of police abuse anonymously or not. The software used to run the site is the original creation of the site's developers, and depending on the success of the Vancouver project, the open source software could be made available to others who wish to create websites like this to monitor the police in their own cities. I spoke with one of the developers of the Vancouver Police Department public complaints website earlier today.
Basically, I'd seen a lot of people that I know, not seen, but a lot of people I know had been harassed or assaulted by the police, and I kind of saw it as a growing problem in Vancouver, and police accountability in general was in the news a lot, so I saw it as a project that could make a big impact with not a lot of work. So,
was there a group of people involved? Because in looking at the website, mm-hmm. it appears as though it would require the talents of a group of individuals to pull something like that together. So, is that accurate? Or
it's a small loosely knit group of people trying to. To get it publicized and launched, so yeah.
Is there, I know you say on the website that there's no connection between anyone who runs the website and the Vancouver Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any affiliations with already existing organizations? Like, I'm familiar with groups like Pivot and the Anti-Poverty Committee, mm-hmm. and groups like that. So I've become aware over the years of some of the policing issues in Vancouver.
Right.
So I guess the question is there people from are these activists or in very general terms that mm-hmm. won't reveal your identity, of course.
Yeah. Not activists for sure, but not necessarily people that were already involved in activism for this issue.
Okay.
What happened was a couple people that had problems with the police that I knew of, I asked for their help to do this, and so that's kind of how it came about. People that had done activism, but not necessarily on over-policing, and then just kind of deciding as a group that we wanted to tackle the issue and do something. And as far as other community groups such as APC and Pivot and Cop Watch, we've told them about the project, and hopefully in the future we'll be able to work with them more on it.
I guess we should describe the actual website to people. What it does is a forum where people can either anonymously or not complain about incidents of police abuse that they have witnessed.
Yeah, that's a good description. We saw problems with the official police complaints process as being more of a whitewashing process than an actual investigative, transparent process. So the site is something that we intend to be unfiltered information about what is actually going on as far as people's problems with the police. So it's kind of a clearinghouse of people's telling the story of their own problems with being abused by the police without mediation by an institution. So the process is people go to the website, register for an account, submit their incident, and then we go through and we approve any incidents that aren't basically people trying to sabotage the site. So
when I was telling a friend about this earlier, they suggested that one potential problem could be maintaining the accuracy of the reports. So I guess this editing, I guess we'll call it an editing process.
Right. Well, we don't edit the submissions, and we don't vote for whether they're true or not. It's like Indie Media, it's a clearinghouse for people to tell their stories. And if people want to be more credible, they can reveal more about who they are. But we allow for anywhere from anonymous submissions to people giving names, addresses, and phone numbers. So people have the opportunity to identify themselves if they feel that would be valuable to their credibility, or they can remain anonymous. So we're providing a forum, but we're not vouching for whether everything on the form is true. But we're hoping that by the very volume of the incidents that we receive, that we're able to convey what's going on.
Are there plans in place to provide any possible legal support or any other kind of community support for people who have been directly violated?
There's no plans for any advocacy, but we do have links on the site to advocacy groups such as Pivot and the BC Civil Liberties Union, and encourage people to go to them for advocacy. We're kind of trying to add one piece of the total puzzle, but not replace other pieces that are already there.
Right. So it's a kind of an ongoing work in progress, I guess.
Yeah. And we haven't begun our full-on publicity campaign to get people to be aware of it. We're planning on doing a press release to about 600 reporters, as well as a sticker campaign to get people aware of it. So right now we've got it on. It's starting to get used a little bit by the community, but we hope to penetrate the mainstream with it.
Is the URL going to stay the same?
Yeah, for the URL is going to. We have no plans to change the URL, and the URL, just so I don't forget, is www.worklessparty.org/VPD. And the reason that it's hosted on the Workless Party's site is that they were able to provide us with anonymous hosting. They're partnering with us to provide that and also help with publicity, which we're very grateful for.
If it goes to schedule, when will the press releases get sent out?
Should be within 2 weeks. What we want to do is book a community center, set it up to do a demonstration of the website, and then invite the press to see our demonstration.
The software used to run the website was created by the site's developers.
Right. Absolutely.
Do you have plans?
Yeah, we definitely do. Yeah, that's part of part of the plan is to open source the software and have it available freely to anybody for download, so we can and also have the marketing and outreach materials available as open source, so anybody can download these things and start a campaign in their area to get people to use their version of the site. And although we don't have it publicly for download, anybody's welcome to contact us via the website contact page if they wish to start a site in their area.
You know, it would be interesting to see maybe several pilot kind of projects in a couple of different cities. I know that the complaints process in Vancouver is probably extremely similar to the one we have here in Ontario, where third parties cannot complain.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals who are, you know, beaten by officers will have to go to the station where the officer works to file a formal complaint. There are many reasons why the police complaints process is less than effective. Here in Ontario, our provincial government has recognized and studied the complaints process and determined that there are shortcomings and promised to change it, although none of these changes have yet to take place. Is there a similar thing happening in Vancouver?
Absolutely. Yeah, it sounds very similar because of recent criticism by the media and community groups about the police complaints process. There's a judge from Alberta is going to be appointed to do yet another investigation of the police complaints process. So there's a lot of studies and a lot of investigations going on, but there's been no commitments to any concrete changes to the police complaints process here, and I could say we're not holding our breath. So.
Well, yeah, I understand the police chief in Vancouver has gone on record as saying he's had his own internal investigation over the some alleged complaints, and that he claims his officers were exonerated by an investigation. And I'm also aware that there is an RCMP investigation that's been ongoing into certain unresolved complaints in the Vancouver Police Department. So, So you're saying now there's going to be a third investigation?
Yes. The third investigation was basically seems to have been prompted by the VPD's denial of things that the RCMP investigation pointed out. Because the RCMP investigation said that there was incidents that were truly problematic and that officers hadn't cooperated in the investigation. And initially, the VPD totally denied that, but now they're saying there are some problem officers and that those problem officers are going to be dealt with. But there's no promise of concrete action. And because of the controversy over this kind of ongoing debacle, this seems to be yet another way to try to show the public that something's being done. But, you know, I'll believe when I see it. I've only lived in Vancouver for about 6 or 7 years, but I've seen it as a growing problem when I've been here. And another one of the reasons that we launched the project was because the VPD wants to get, I think, 50% more officers on duty in preparation for the 2010 Olympics. They're not saying it's in preparation for that, but that's what we're assuming this huge expansion would be for. So we want to have some light shed on basically how badly they're using their existing resources before they're allowed to get more.
Once again, you can visit that website at www.worklessparty.org/VPD. Workless Party is one word. That's all for this week. Tune into this station next week for more. If you'd like to know more about this program, or if you have any comments or story ideas, send an email to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's show. From CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, I'm Ron Anisich.